Good afternoon.
What's up?
Hey there.
How we doing?
What's up? What's up?
Stupid. What is that from? Scary Movie?
Yes. What's up?
Scary Movie 1.
Yeah, the only one that's like kind of okay, I guess. I don't know what you guys feel about Scary Movie 1.
Well, how many feel about Scary Movie 1, Adam.
It's a masterpiece. Let me just say it's a great film.
Yeah, it's the only one that's actually a true parody.
Right? I guess.
The rest are all kind of just...
Well...
They're all just bits. It's just a bunch of bits thrown together, whereas the first one's actually, like, the whole movie is actually a movie.
Well, it's coherent. I think the Scary Movie, the first one in particular, is like inherently flawed though, because it's a parody.
It's making fun of a parody.
Of a parody, and right. I don't think that makes any sense. I don't think it's unnecessary at the very least.
Wait, explain that to me.
I mean, it's a parody primarily of Scream, and Scream obviously a parody of slasher films.
Right. You know? And an effective parody of slasher films.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's like, wait, the fact that they didn't understand that set speaks to how stupid the movie is.
Sure.
So I've always had an issue with it on that level.
But then the rest of the Scary Movies are just like Family Guy bits.
Kind of. Actually,
you know, they're all just kind of like these little jokes thrown in there.
The second one is so bad.
That one's really bad.
God.
Three's okay. Three's fun.
Three, I guess I can get that.
I don't know why they did the whole 8 Mile thing.
That's right. They did do 8 Mile.
That's
what
not
the
really
hell were
a
they thinking?
Yeah, that's not a horror movie. I don't really know why you're making fun of 8 Mile, but all right.
I mean, maybe it's a horror movie.
It's a horror movie for Jay-Z, I guess. Like, look at this white guy taking all of my fame and fortune. Very scary. Yeah. Nick, you want to hear a story?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. By the way, turn your camera on. I can't see you.
Oh, my camera's on.
Huh. Well, that's peculiar.
How's that?
Weird.
Still bad. Still.
Oh, okay. Well,
we
we'll
have
get
this
there.
Giant green N. It kind of looks like you, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you squint, it looks from a distance.
A little bit like you. I think we're okay.
It looks like if you were puzzled and complex like a character from the Peanuts. And you had that sort of grimaced look on your face.
It's an artistic choice at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's minimalist.
Yes,
exactly. It's a real minimalist.
But we still know it's Nick.
Yeah. This is a great sight gag for the audio listeners. This is great.
That's the thing. It's not even a good sight gag. No. Like, even if this was a video program, this still wouldn't be that funny. It's actually a pretty poor sight gag.
Hey, you know, certain movies that we have to watch on this podcast do crazy things to us.
So, the other night, I had a bit of a night.
Mm-hmm.
I just went out with some friends. We just went to the local watering hole. Got ourselves some drinks.
Went pimping?
Yeah, I went pimping.
As Nico does occasionally?
Exactly. I got my cane and my fur jacket out and hit the town.
Riding around in the Nico-mobile.
That's
the purple Nico-mobile.
Okay. These are some weird characteristics you're throwing into the story, Adam.
I went to a brewery and I sat outside the brewery and we had some drinks and we talked and we had a jolly old time.
And Are you at liberty to say which brewery?
Witch Doctor in Southington. Actually, yeah, that's relevant to the story.
Okay. Yeah. We've been to Witch Doctor. They got their, they got cornhole outside.
Yeah. Well, they don't now because of the vid, but yeah. But so we're sitting outside and we're talking, whatever. And you know how like that brewery, Nick, is like a little inlet. And there are brick buildings, or I guess there's one brick building that surrounds the entire patio area.
Yes.
Yes. So there are windows to the right of, or actually to the left of that area. To the right is the brewery. To the left is this random, like sort of, it looks like a factory or like an abandoned warehouse of some kind. And you never see anyone in those windows to the left. I always wondered what was in there, but I don't think I've ever gotten a straight answer on that. Well, I have an answer for you.
You know
what's in that building?
Go ahead.
I could guess. I get.
I'll tell you what's in that building. Adam Hall's in that building.
Wait, what? What do you mean?
Adam was just in the building, peeping outside the window, like three stories up, and he looks down and he squints and he goes, "Wait a minute, there's Nico on that bench over there." Nary a word. Nary a word.
Wait, did you tell him like the next day, Adam?
He told me just now.
Yeah, like 5 minutes ago.
Why? Okay. Why were you in the
building? I felt violated.
Regardless, okay, so regardless of your creepy peeping Tom rear window bullshit.
Yes.
A little rear window-ish.
A little bit. Yeah. Just a little bit.
Yeah.
Regardless of that, why were you there?
Were you
filming? Is that where you jerk off? I mean.
I go there to think.
What the fuck? You go to some random abandoned warehouse to think? What, did you climb up the walls and scale into a window?
No. So if you recall, a couple times on this pod in the past couple months, I've mentioned that I've been helping a friend of mine out with a short film that we've been making.
Okay.
Of which I have helped a little bit on the production, but I've also been acting in the film, unfortunately. Anyway,
aren't you the lead in the film?
I am the lead in the film. Wow. You know, look at me, guys.
I like how you call the acting a little.
A little. Hey, let's be very clear. It is acting only a little.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Not much is going on there. So we had started filming, I think, in January. Like, I don't know why we started filming in January, because it was fucking cold and we were outside most of the time. But things were put on hold, of course, because of something that happened in the world. And I don't remember what that was, but yeah. Something happened. Mm. So we've been kind of delaying for a long time, and only now we're like, okay, it's safe to finally get back and shoot one more scene, the last scene that we never finished, and it was an interior dream sequence, and that's what we were doing. We were just finishing up the dream sequence that we needed to film, and we got it done at like 12:30 at night, and yeah, I just went home. That was that. So I was shooting a movie.
Okay, cool. Well, how did you gain access to that building?
Well, my buddy
broke in.
Well, yeah, we broke in. We scaled the fence with grappling hooks, a la Batman. No, my buddy like does a few jobs for a guy that works in a studio up there. So he just lent him the space.
There's studio space up there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's what that is.
Yeah. So there's this giant. So there's this.
No wonder no one's ever in there.
Well, there's
the bustling Connecticut film scene is.
Oh, it's so prominent.
It's slowed down a bit these days. No wonder it's an abandoned warehouse.
It's nothing there.
Yep.
But there's this that entire half of the building that you saw is like just nothing space that they don't know what to do with. So if anyone wants to use it, it's free. So you can just go up there and film if you want to do an interior scene if you want to. But otherwise, the other half of the building is studio space for X amount of, you know, Connecticut media companies.
Got it. Yeah, I would have liked to have visited a film set. I don't know.
It looked it was fairly legit too. We did
too much to ask. Like, hey, my close friend who I do two movie podcasts with would maybe be interested in seeing me star in a movie.
Well, you know,
a set visit would have been. I don't know.
Well,
is it too much to ask?
I didn't want to be rude.
Is it too much to ask? Interrupt my evening. I'm not talking about anything important.
I was being considerate.
You saw who I was sitting with. Did it look like we were talking about anything important?
You were having one of those intense conversations with Nick Hill.
Yeah.
It was, you know, the usual intense Nick Hill conversation.
We were yelling at each other about random. That's all we were doing is arguing. I would have enjoyed a break.
Was normally Alexis you yell at each there? Other yes. over cornhole. So what were you guys doing? What were you yelling
I was
going to
say
about?
Alexis was there. So
we were planning an upcoming trip and we were yelling at each other and because we didn't agree on the details. That's what was happening.
Well, that's when you just text.
And I would have appreciated a break.
Well, I'm sorry, dude. We had all sorts of goodies up there too.
Just hit me up.
It was very hot though. It was extremely hot up there. So maybe you wouldn't have liked that. You wouldn't have been able to stay for too long because I was sweating my nuts off, but you know, yeah, I guess I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I didn't take you away from your little brewery evening to visit the film set.
I accept your apology.
Okay.
Half-heartedly, but I still accept it.
I'll let you visit me when I'm doing another fucking drumming video.
Okay. Give that a watch, by the way, on Adam's Twitter feed. At some Adam Hall.
Thank you.
Check out the latest production. What's up, Nick?
Not much.
You want to hang up the call and hop back in?
I guess.
Yeah, give that a try. Let's see what happens. There it is.
Wow.
That was
you don't even need to edit that.
Yeah, that was perfect.
Perfect, perfect.
Okay, what are we doing? It's June Carpenter.
Woo. Still, yeah.
We're wrapping up the last day of June here.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, what a way to end it.
That's it.
We conclude our descent into mediocrity, I would say.
This is a little further than mediocrity.
This is really unfortunate.
I know, right?
I really feel like we're on a roll.
Yeah, I'm sure John Carpenter felt the same thing.
Yeah. So this is like a microcosm of what John Carpenter was going through, our experience.
Yeah, I would call this kind of like the podcast version of Apocalypse Now. You know, it's just we're going down that river and it's like beautiful Vietnamese scenery. And then at the end, it's a crazy guy that kills a cow.
Yeah, that's not too far off, unfortunately. It's kind of what we witnessed.
Yeah, it's basically what's going on here. Ghosts of Mars.
Yeah.
Ghosts of motherfucking Mars.
Ghosts of Mars.
Starring Ice Cube. Yeah. Jason Statham. Amongst other fairly recognizable character actors. Not a good movie.
Oh boy, yeah, no guys, not a good one at all.
But I will say this, not a good movie, but for different reasons than I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because it feels like this movie is bad for all the reasons that his other movies were good.
Interesting.
Okay. What do you mean by that?
Well, so some of the things he was doing really well before was like pacing, right? Building tension, having good character names. I don't know, being actually scary when he wants to be scary, or making me laugh when he wants to make me laugh.
Desolation Williams is not a bad character name.
I knew you were going to love that, by the way.
I think it's a terrible character name, and that was the one that came to mind.
Oh, really? It's really bad. Yeah? I'm right there with you. That's a stupid fucking name.
This sounds like Desolation of Smog. Yeah, it's stupid.
The dragon in Desolation of Smog. It's Desolation Williams up there, right, guarding the treasure.
Like, of all the names he's come up with, all of the badass, awesome, cool character names, this one doesn't fit.
Well, it seems like he was trying to tap into like that Snake Plissken sort of vibe, but this was just the worst kind of idea you could have had.
I have a fun fact for you. I didn't mean to jump into this too soon, but I have a fun fact for you.
Yeah.
That character Desolation Williams, played by Ice Cube, who's a convict in the movie, a convict that is supposed to be transported from one prison on Mars to another prison on Mars. That was supposed to be Snake Plissken.
Really?
This movie was originally conceived as a backdoor sequel to the Escape from New York movies. And it was going to be like the third installment. I don't know if it would have been called Escape from Mars or whatever, but this was going to be in that series. So that was going to be Snake Plissken. And so it's kind of interesting that you thought that's what they were going for.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that works.
Yeah, it probably doesn't, but neither did Escape from LA. And I think the reason that Escape from LA didn't work, they decided to nix this whole idea.
Yeah. I wonder what that movie would have been like, though, because I can't imagine it would have been like this. I mean, this is so different.
A lot would have had to have been different.
Yeah.
I mean,
it sounds strange to say, but like next to this, Escape from New York is fairly grounded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
As outrageous of a statement as that is, yeah. I think it's absolutely true.
For sure. For sure. There are weird oxygen devices in both movies.
That's, boy. Oh, man, guys.
Look, I think you're onto something when you say this movie is bad for the same reasons the other ones are good. And what I mean by that is John Carpenter is known for taking ridiculous material very seriously. Mm-hmm. And that's why his movies generally work very well. Escape from New York takes that premise seriously, although it has fun with it. They Live takes that premise seriously, although they have fun with it. He's never mocking genre films. He is engaging in genre filmmaking. And so like the guy generally strays away from parody. This movie, Ghost from Mars, is begging to be a parody.
Yes.
And I think the fact that he took this one so seriously worked to its detriment.
Well, it feels like almost the inverse of everything Carpenter goes for. Like all those elements that we talked, that you just mentioned with atmosphere and pacing and like you said, taking something seriously. I mean, the atmosphere, oh boy, there's no atmosphere in this movie.
Literally. No.
Literally no atmosphere.
Yeah. I see what you did there. Yeah. It's just a very thin atmosphere. Okay?
Right. Yeah.
Come
sure.
on. Get your planetary facts right.
I saw The Martian.
Okay.
I just think that like the way the storytelling was done is counter to the way he does storytelling typically, yeah. right? So the fact that they're going back and forth between this woman telling the officials what happened, and even at one point going back and forth between like Ice Cube describing what happened before, and they're going back and forth between like, this is what happened, and then they're showing it, and then they go back to the courtroom and she's explaining, and it doesn't work.
No.
And usually we talked about something a while back where, you know, the characters know more than the viewer, and we see the characters reacting to what happens before we see what happens, right? Mm. And how effective that was. That was in
They Live.
They Live, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And here it's the exact opposite, and it just falls flat. It doesn't work.
Yeah.
For me.
But I agree, yeah.
I think there's a lot of fascinating reasons for that, though. I mean, a lot of it is, again, just like, man. I mean, I think a lot of it is the pacing, too, just the way this film is rushed along. And like, Carpenter likes to take his time, and in this, it's like it's like he was high off of his ass.
There is no tension here.
No.
There's none.
No. Every time a movie's trying to be disturbing, it's like the silliest thing ever, like with, I don't know, what the fuck that guy was who was spouting gibberish the whole time, the fucking Marilyn Manson type.
Which guy? The main ghost guy? The main
big baddie, yeah.
Okay.
Like, it's like I should be like disturbed by the fact that he's like chucking heads around, but it's just so funny to me.
Yeah.
And but it's not even funny. That's the thing.
It's ridiculous. It's just stupid as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
The sets look so phony. I mean, none of the effects work. I think as well, by the way, this is, I think, pretty obvious, but like, talk about bad casting.
So really bad.
Like, whoa.
Really bad. We have horny Jason Statham.
Yes.
Horny right? as
hell. Which has only been good twice, I think.
We have Ice Cube playing Ice Cube in space.
Yes. Yes.
he was like that close to actually saying the words "fuck the police" in right. this movie. It was that close.
Also, yeah. Like when you hear the
Dre,
title,
I got something to say.
When you hear the title "Ghosts from Mars," you don't expect a cop movie,
right?
And I also just want—I mean, this is 2001, but the fact that all the cops are white and all the criminals are black is a problem.
Well, okay, I will say I do think part of that was intentional.
You think there was commentary?
I think there was a thinly veiled attempt at commentary.
I
don't think it worked.
A thinly veiled attempt. You're better off not attempting. If you're not going to actually make the attempt, don't attempt it.
No, I fair. I do think though that this
does not work
on some level, commenting on the tension between black people and the police. I think there is a little bit of that in there.
Yeah, it's you know, if I'm supposed to believe that we're in some futuristic world where we're traveling to Mars just to move prisoners around.
Right.
I better hope our criminal justice system has been, you know, worked on a little bit since then. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, this movie really proves there's no hope for us.
I was going to say, I hate to be the cynic.
We're still doing this 150 years from now? Are you kidding me?
I hate to be the cynic, but I have a feeling that's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Let's talk about the casting for a second here. Mm-hmm. So, Statham. This is coming right after Snatch, right? What year was Snatch? 2000?
Was it 2000?
Well,
because I know Lockstock was 98.
So
this was Jason Statham when he still had hair.
Yeah, okay, that's right. True. Yeah.
That's really the key here.
Really an underrated part of the whole Jason Statham mythos is the fact that he's a bald guy.
True. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Which makes him more badass, I guess.
Okay, so let's look at the IMDb page for a second. So we had a couple little roles. The Shaman in 1993 was a background dancer. But his first like major film role was Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels was 98. And then he does Snatch in 2000 with Guy Ritchie again. Then he does a movie called Turn It Up in 2000, which stars Ja Rule.
Oh, no.
Don't know anything about that movie. And then Ghosts of Mars is 2001, and then it's all downhill from there. So I think like this was the moment where Jason Statham broke bad. That's my theory.
Yeah,
you know, he really had some potential there. He was like a really interesting, charismatic actor. That accent was so distinct. Uh-huh. It was so easy to do a Jason Statham impression. And like, he was doing good heist movies. And then all of a sudden he became like the really silly action star. you know, Transporter came right after that, and it's just been, it's been all downhill from there until Fast and Furious saved it.
You know? I don't mind Transporter, the first one anyway. I haven't, apparently the second one's okay, but the third one is apparently also like shitty as fuck.
Yeah. I mean, they're all fine for what they are. Yeah.
I mean, he's not, I don't say he's like, his career wasn't ruined necessarily.
Oh, I wouldn't say ruined. I would say he broke bad. There's sure. a difference.
Yeah. I can't say the same about John Carpenter, but yeah. yeah.
John Carpenter only made one movie after this?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, he made a couple like shorts in between with the guy who directed Critters.
Oh, word.
They collaborated a little bit on like a horror anthology series. But yeah, essentially he never made another feature until 2010's The Ward.
And how is The Ward? Have you seen
it? I haven't seen The Ward. Not okay. yet. I guess I will eventually.
Well, you might as well now.
Jesus.
Might as well get to it. Yeah, I would call that bad casting as well. I'm not familiar with the main chick. Natasha Henstridge.
She's the lead in the Species films, where she plays this alien that looks like this hot woman and just like invades people's bodies and kills them, and it's kind of nasty. So
it's like B-rate Under the Skin.
It's an action version of Under the Skin. Yes.
Got it. Okay. Pam Grier pops up.
Yeah, as no, it's not ambiguous. She's a lesbian, right?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Totally.
Cool.
Yeah.
So there's that. And, you know, a lesbian cop who's... Why do they even throw that in the movie? I was very confused by that.
Which one? The other lesbian cop?
Yeah, well, not there's anything wrong with that.
No, of course. My father's a lesbian.
Yeah, I mean, mine too. but I was just like, wait, why are you going to do that if you're not going to do anything with it?
Because lesbians are cool, I guess. I mean, that was like the logic in the early 2000s.
Lesbians are dope.
Yeah, no, I love lesbians, but like, it's like, I don't know, a trope of exploitation films, I guess, right?
I mean, this isn't really an exploitation film, though. I mean, man, I'm pretty convinced
that John Carpenter wanted to make like a tongue-in-cheek exploitation film and just didn't do it.
No, he was. He's actually said that on many occasions, that he was trying to parody stuff like Commando and not even parody, just play into something like that. He wanted to make a film closer to Commando and Rambo Part 2.
Right.
But I don't think he has any idea of how to actually do that. Like,
no, I don't think he knows how to do parody.
This is a deeply confused movie.
Yes.
In my opinion.
By the way, that the other lesbian cop plays a lesbian Veep. So I'm not sure what her actual sexual orientation is, Clea Duvall, but she's really good in Veep.
Let's just turn this into Lesbians the Podcast.
I'm down.
Okay, let's go. Favorite lesbians, go. This is a good question.
Sarah Paulson.
I like Sarah Paulson. Sarah Paulson's great. I think I'm tired of Ellen.
And so is Hollywood, apparently.
Yeah.
People don't like Ellen.
Apparently, yeah, she's been getting a lot of bad flack.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'll take that.
Favorite lesbian?
Oh, boy. I think I was going to say Sarah Paulson. I'm not even kidding.
Nick, favorite lesbian?
Oh, God, I don't know.
I can't tell if this is offensive or not.
It's definitely offensive. But it's probably.
I don't know. Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer.
Now, that's offensive.
yeah, I know.
With the exception of Inception, Ellen Page. I like Ellen Page.
I love Ellen Page.
Oh, what am I talking about? Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster.
Yeah, good call.
There it is. Okay, Jesus Christ. It's Jodie fucking Foster.
Lesbians rule, dude.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Okay.
Got so off topic. I'm just letting you guys have the conversation. I'm like, hey, well.
He's like, I want no part of this one.
They'll get out of the system, you know?
What were we talking about?
Talking about the cast of this film.
Oh yeah, it's not good. It's a bad cast.
It's quite bad, actually.
It's a bad cast of a movie. I wouldn't have used this cast.
You know, poor Pam Grier, too, because she had a bit of an upswing with Jackie Brown, and then she had to go and do this.
Mm.
It's really sad. I don't really think
the cast is the problem, though, with this movie. Mm. I mean, it's certainly bad.
It's a big part, in my opinion. But.
You know, it got to a point where about 15, 20, 30 minutes into the movie, when I realized I was going to hate it, I was being too harsh, and I was like, let's try to take some notes on some of the positive things here. And one of the things I guess I kind of took away that I liked was Ice Cube. As much as he's bad, I enjoyed him.
I mean, it's nice to see like a comforting presence in a mist of like, who are yous? but like, but like, God, I hate to say it. I oh boy, it's, I love Carpenter's craft. I really do. I can't stand it in this.
Yeah.
It's well, really bad.
It's a poorly directed movie.
Yes.
I mean, if his other films are, you know, either classic rock or classical or jazz or something like that, this is like 80s hair metal.
Yeah.
I hate. Yeah.
That's what this movie is.
Sure.
I mean, this is the 80s hair metal of the John Carpenter films.
It's the Def Leppard of the John Carpenter filmography.
Not even Def Leppard. That's too good.
Yeah. It's just like everything
talking
about
like, this is Kiss.
Hey, you know what I
mean?
Hey,
I'm good with that.
Hey,
no, but even when you
watch
look at,
your fucking
even
mouth.
When you look at the big Martian watch villain, he looks like
fucking mouth.
Yeah, this is Kiss.
Kiss sucks, man.
Kiss
I'm coming
suck.
To Cincinnati in a week and a half, and there will be hell to pay.
Listen, Nico, remove the makeup and the tongue. What is left with Kiss? Nothing.
Gene Simmons.
Okay, well,
that's who's left.
That's a problem.
I just want to be clear, there's a professional wrestler who used to dress up like them, and it made more sense there.
What was his name?
It was Sting.
Sting? Was it, there's another Sting?
Sting? Yeah. Like the guy from Dune? That's
no,
Sting?
No, he used to wear white face makeup. And, no, not, definitely not. No. You
by
know
way,
how I feel about the police.
Sting is
I wish we could
Dune,
just defund them. I wish we could just defund the police.
Sting is in Dune.
Sting is in David Lynch's Dune.
Is he
the band,
be in
sorry.
The new Dune?
As the same character?
Yeah.
No.
That would be nice.
That would be nice.
I yeah. would prefer that.
Let yeah. me look up the one in Dune. Just make sure.
Fade. He played Fade, an assassin. Yeah.
I thought you haven't seen Dune. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it. I just know
he's you just know that Sting yeah. is in it, and you know his character name and biography.
Yes. Well, I'm reading Dune. Yeah. I am reading
oh, okay.
The
got
book.
It. Got it. Got it. Got it. Got it.
Is the character's name Sting?
No.
No. Sting from the Police is an actor in the film Dune.
Really? He acted.
Yes. Oh, he's got a show on Broadway, doesn't he?
Does he?
Currently, I mean, I guess not currently, but did before this happened.
I'm pretty sure.
I don't like that. I don't yeah. like him. I don't like the police.
Would you stop with this
they're,
slander?
They're a terrible
this
band.
Sting slander.
I've always
quit
hated
Sting
them.
Sting and Sting.
Ugh.
I like this. I like the police. Yeah. What's wrong with the police?
I just can't stand them.
I don't like. They're not like my favorite or anything, but yeah, there's nothing wrong with them. They're fun. Sting is cool. You can't understand what he's saying, but like, yeah, he's dope.
Man, that's pretty crazy. Sting is in Dune. I need to see Dune.
Yeah, I need to see it too. I've been itching to watch the miniseries because apparently it's pretty good.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like apparently everyone's like Sci-Fi Channel sucks. The only good thing it did was the Dune miniseries.
Well, Battlestar Dark Galactica was on.
Yeah, that's true. I never saw that.
All right, I'm cutting it right here. Okay, you guys. Just because you don't like the movie doesn't mean we can't talk about it. You need to stay on topic. You
okay,
need to stay on topic.
Right.
This happens every time. If you don't like it, I don't like it either. It's
if
a bad movie.
We have to Ghost of Mars.
We have to man up here. Okay.
Ghost of Mars. Okay, poorly directed. Directed movie,
face your
bad
fears.
Direction. You want to read your well? Don't read your review.
Oh,
on
you
Letterboxd,
want me to read my? Okay, hold on.
No, just but okay. Pull it up.
I gotta pull up my review because it's quite accurate.
This was great internet content.
Oh yes.
If you want some great internet content, go to Adam Hall's Letterboxd at Adam Hall.
Yes. Yes.
Go to letterboxd.com/ Adam Hall.
I did a very long and thorough review of this movie that was quite well received by many publications across the world.
Great content. Actually, yeah, AP picked it up and they distributed it to all the local newspapers, became a syndicated column.
John Carpenter actually, like he's like, I'm upset that you talk so negatively about my movie, but I have to agree. It was quite nice. So let's go.
In fact, I am replacing my star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame with this review.
Yeah. So it goes the review goes like this: dissolves.
I hope this is verbatim.
Dissolves.
He's paraphrasing a bit.
Dissolves. Yeah, just a little bit. Yeah. So the other part I said, dissolves. And, you know, it continues like that for a little while. And the last three or four things I said were dissolves. Oh, yeah. And the occasional wipe, period.
Gotcha.
I didn't catch any wipes.
What?
I didn't catch a wipe.
You didn't catch a wipe?
I caught hella dissolves. Maybe I wasn't paying attention, but I must have missed those wipes.
Yeah, there's some pretty bad wipes, dude.
Okay.
What was up with all the dissolves?
Guys,
that's a good point.
There is a scene in this movie where two characters are at the end of a hallway and it dissolves to them towards the camera.
It does that thing where they dissolve in the middle of a scene. Weren't we talking
into
about
the same
this?
Scene?
They dissolve in the middle of an action. So they go from one end of the hallway, dissolve closer to the camera at the other end of the hallway.
I feel like we talked about this on another podcast this year.
Really?
I forget what it was now.
It's
is it like House or something?
Maybe.
There was a movie that was like heavily stylized that used dissolves within one particular scene without cutting. And I'm like, I didn't even know that was possible, but this movie pulled it off.
Might have been House.
I forget what it was. We definitely talked about that at some point.
It might have been House.
Sounds like
something
House would do.
I mean, it works there.
Yes.
But here, that he used dissolves to extend an explosion of a hot air balloon or something. Remember that?
Yeah. Right.
And he made it like twice as long as it needed to be, but it was so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work.
But like that, it's funny you say that because that's like, it doesn't work. You're right. But at least I can pinpoint like why he did it. There are scenes where they're just talking, you know, in what is normally a shot reverse shot scenario, which is a quick cut, and he does a dissolve. I'm like, what's this is the most unmotivated thing I think I've ever seen in a movie.
I wonder, was it making up for like footage issues?
That's what I thought, but like there's no way you lost footage in between the characters 50 feet away to when they get 10 feet away from the camera.
Or like there were two different takes where he liked the first half of one take and the second half of another.
It's fucking stupid.
I can't think of any stylistic justification other than the fact that I guess our main character takes some sort of drug. And so are they trying to emulate that? But it's irrelevant to the plot.
I think the only reason it was done is because the entire film is technically a flashback. So, man, I don't know. He was doing it because it's supposed to feel like a memory.
Right. That's shorthand for memory, generally speaking. The dissolve.
But like, it doesn't work. I still get the sense that this is a flashback memory, even with just cuts. You don't have to do the dissolve.
It's kind of like he picked the transition at random.
Yes.
It's like, you know, I'm going to cut here, but I'm going to dissolve here and I'm going to use a wipe here. And there was no justification for any use of the transition.
It was ridiculous. It was the stupidest thing I've seen. It reminded me of like the spoons in Room, like just waiting for the moment when a spoon would pop up.
Right.
In this case, when a wipe or a dissolve would pop up. By the way, there are tons of wipes in the movie. How did you miss them?
I must admit, it's kind of like when you're watching like a sixth grader do a PowerPoint presentation for the first time, but he doesn't really know how to use PowerPoint, but he really loves the transitions. So like, you know, you'll get to the next slide and every bullet point will have like firework effects around it. It's like, just cut it with the transitions, man. Mm-hmm. Just give me the text as presented. That's something that you're supposed to learn with age, is that transitions are less effective than you think they are.
Yes.
Yeah. Not the case with Carpenter, apparently.
It does really seem like Carpenter had this sort of Benjamin Button thing going on here, where like the older he got, the more he got high and played video games.
Yes.
And yeah, I agree. The younger he was, the more he just inherently understood the craft of filmmaking.
Yeah, I agree. I mean,
and it's very weird. Why would that be the case? I mean, do you think he just, is it possible like he had a stroke and didn't tell anybody
well,
or something?
Because I watch Carpenter interviews all the time because I actually like listening to him talk. He's not like David Lynch where it's like, okay, clearly this guy's crazy. Mm. But no, he's perfectly fine. He's not senile or anything like that. You know, he's just old and tired. He just doesn't want, I don't think he has the same spirit to be making movies anymore. But like,
I mean, it's weird because, you know, you could think of anybody else in any job, right? They start working at the office and they're young and they're motivated and they're doing great. And maybe 10 or 20 years working the same job, you just start to see them get deflated and they do their work, but they're just not motivated in the same way. You know, and we see that happen all over the country all the time. But when it happens in something like film, it's harder because it's so public.
True. And you're constantly being told, like, if your movie, say you're proud of a movie and then everyone else says it sucks, that's going to take a big of a toll. It's going to take a big toll on you.
But it's weird to think of the movie industry as just another industry, just like any other job, really. And maybe that's, to a degree, what's going on with Carpenter. He makes movies because that's what he knows how to do. Mm-hmm. But it definitely, this movie doesn't seem motivated at all. I mean,
I'm not even sure it felt as much like a Carpenter film. It felt more like a Paul W.S. Anderson movie to me.
Yeah.
Like an early Paul W.S. Like, again, it reminded me a lot of the Resident Evil movies, you know, in that
inside, way. I see that. I see where you're coming from.
So, yeah, it's just like Carpenter's just not really here in this movie, which is kind of sad to say, but, you know, it's just, that's just what it is.
Here is the most damning quote from anyone, okay? In a 2006 interview, Ice Cube.
Oh, no.
Ice Cube said this is the worst movie he had ever appeared in, calling it, quote, unwatchable in many ways. John Carpenter really let us down with the special effects on that one. It looked like something out of a film from 1979. Ice Cube!
It definitely just looked like, it looked like a movie set. It looked,
yes,
like actors with makeup on. And I don't know how some filmmakers get away with like making Lord of the Rings and making that believable versus Ghost of Mars, which just looks ridiculous. It looks like a Halloween party.
Yeah, it looked more like Bedrock from the Flintstones than it did Mars.
Sure.
You know what I kept thinking of? I kept thinking of like the haunted graveyard and sets like that.
It going just to lake compounds, going to an amusement park, their little horror attractions. Yeah.
It just looks so phony. I just don't know what happened here.
Yeah, it's a real letdown.
And, you know, he did have some like decent ideas, I thought. Like that weapon, that those like blades that the ghosts threw at the people to behead them and cut their arms off. Like, that's a really unique weapon. Mm-hmm. And you can stage some interesting battle sequences with that, especially like if you get the gore right and you know how to shoot it. But it was the combination of the bad CGI and just like uninspired direction. And I just shrugged every time like those blades took someone's head off.
Oh, it's so anticlimactic.
And I shouldn't have felt that way. But the movie is filled with that. Like, it just seems like he doesn't know where to put the camera at any moment. And either he's cutting too much or he's not cutting enough.
But that's so bizarre to me because he's always been good at knowing where to put the camera.
Yeah.
Always. Even in Dark Star, I was like, this is working for me. I hate, it's crazy as that sounds, but it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had an issue with him, especially on a level of cinematography. But like, I'm just gonna keep going back to this. It just felt like Carpenter wasn't there.
Right. And then you combine that with like some pretty uninspired music choices as well. Apparently Anthrax is on this soundtrack.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah. Anthrax was brought in to do some guitar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that has never been my favorite Carpenter score. Like, I am just down for him just sitting at the piano and doing his thing. Anytime like you bring like the electric guitar into the room, it destroys it for me. Like, it just feels like he goes to like grunge or post grunge with it.
That's a style that was very popular in the early 2000s, like the kind of rock music that was used, and it just never worked. It always felt kind of cheesy and out of place.
Yeah,
which is weird because I love rock is probably my favorite genre.
Yeah,
but in movies, it just, I don't know what it is. It just rarely ever, you know, has the intended effect. Which is funny though, because Carpenter later got much better at using guitar tracks in like the newest Halloween film, because they're all over the place in that movie.
Yeah,
it's everywhere, but they're like really great and creepy and eerie when he uses them.
Right, they're minimalist too.
Yeah. But here it's like just a song, like a metal song, just interjected where it doesn't belong.
Yeah, and it doesn't work in a movie like this. I mean, again, you either play it as a straight horror movie or you play it as a comedy, but this, as you said before, is like in search of its identity. Like, it doesn't know what movie it is it's trying to be. And yeah, just none of it works. All of it was just totally uninspired. And I think that's what bummed me out. Like, I was hoping for something like just grotesquely bad. I was hoping for something that like would shock me or surprise me or at least amuse me. Like, oh, wow, John Carpenter is really trying something here and it's not working at all. He's not really trying anything here.
This is what I keep coming back to as well. And just talking about Carpenter in relation to his career is that, like you said, it's not like a room thing where you're having fun with the choices or how bad it is. It's like just sad and depressing to watch this movie, knowing about Carpenter and his awesome career. It's just like, what happened to you? So yeah, this movie depresses the shit out of me.
I mean, it's almost kind of like, it's like, as sad as this is, like seeing an old person like getting lost in their own home or something. Like,
yeah,
You know, seriously, like Alzheimer's dementia. I don't know if
it was quite that sad.
No, that's how it feels. It feels like this guy has like lost his way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like,
yeah.
I don't know, man.
Maybe he's got one more in him. Maybe he's got one more.
I would love to see him do it. I mean,
how old is he?
78. He's not that old.
He's not like ridiculously old.
No.
Yeah, he's 72. No, I just think he's
72?
He was born in 48.
Oh my God. Yeah, he's got a shit ton more movies.
I just don't think he's motivated to do this anymore.
No, I don't think so either. But it's like he played Doom and he's like, I want to make a movie on Mars now. And that's what you get. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what this was, guys.
It had a couple. I mean, I'm going to try to be positive.
Well, try to explain the plot. How about that?
You want me to do that first? Okay. Yeah. So we have a bunch of cops arriving on Mars to pick up Desolation Williams and transport him, like you said.
Desolation Row.
We are constantly reminded that Desolation Williams is not your standard criminal. He is like one of the galaxy's most dangerous men.
Yes.
Right, and they're saying, you know, this is not your typical job. You need to be prepared and ready for this mentally and physically and get all your equipment ready. And they get there, and it's Ice Cube.
Yes.
Coming straight out of Compton.
Well, and that's the problem, is just Ice Cube is always Ice Cube, right?
Yeah.
And I guess here comes in the bad casting, right? It's just utterly unbelievable that Ice Cube is the most dangerous man in the galaxy.
When you cast Ice Cube as your lead, you've changed the movie.
Okay.
You've changed the movie.
Has Ice Cube ever been like that intimidating?
No.
Yeah, because he's been cast in these parts a lot.
Right.
And I'm like, really? It just doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, he's got like, he's good at like acting angry, I guess, but that's like it.
Right.
He's got like one note and he keeps that note.
But you laugh at him as he gets angry, though.
Yeah, I know. It's,
I like him in certain things, like when he's cast correctly.
He's good in the 21 Jump Street movies.
Yeah. Oh, he's great.
Really good in those. Yeah.
But that's because he's playing up the Ice Cube isms.
Yeah.
It works. But then, I don't know, you see him in the second Triple X movie.
Sure.
I'm like, what?
And even Jason Statham again, you know, we're introduced to this horny cop who just keeps wanting to bone the main character. It gets tiring. It gets tiresome.
You know, this might be a last chance to nut.
Almost verbatim. And then she agrees. Not even reluctantly. She's just like, yeah, I guess you're right.
Here's a fun fact for you. This is the first ever on-screen kiss in Jason Statham's career.
Okay.
All right.
That was an IMDb fun fact.
All right.
What a fun fact. I'm having so much fun.
Oh, yeah. I had a blast with that one.
Did you feel like he was like, I don't know, this is maybe a strange criticism, but do you think the way he walked was kind of funny?
Yes.
Okay,
thank you. He waddled.
It's very
He waddled
weird.
Like a fucking penguin. He like had a wide stance and he was like.
It it looked like Charlie Chaplin. I'm like, what are you doing? It was so
bizarre. It was like he was, he did some method acting and he watched like a bunch of soldiers carrying like really, really heavy gear. And he's like, yeah, that's what I got to do. But he just looks stupid.
It's like he was trying to like look like it was it like supposed to be a badass walk? Like, I'm such a tough guy. Look at me go.
Maybe he was the only guy who like figured out that they were on Mars and Mars has a different gravitational pull.
Right, and he was trying to pull that.
Yeah, like, because everyone else was just walking around. And that's one of the details we haven't mentioned about this movie yet, is the workarounds. The sci-fi workarounds are absurd. Like, they have these things called oxygen glasses in this movie where they switch on just the frames of their glasses and it allows them to breathe in Mars's atmosphere. Don't know how that works, but I don't know. What happens if the glasses fall off?
I thought they were terraforming. I recall something about terraforming. I could be wrong.
They have oxygen glasses, though. There's a character with oxygen glasses.
But I know they mentioned terraforming. Because if that's the case, then the oxygen glasses have zero purpose. Because Mars's atmosphere is breathable. Ice Cube wasn't wearing any fucking glasses.
Okay, but at the beginning, she is right here. I think these are oxygen glasses.
just love this sentence. Look here, these are oxygen glasses.
But,
I don't know what the hell
know.
Is going on in this movie. That's a good point, because they're not wearing glasses later on.
Well, as you know, you breathe through your eyes, so this completely makes sense.
That's a great point. When did they stop wearing glasses?
Man, this movie's so confusing. Okay,
they
go ahead.
They were gills, not eyelids. Gills, he was out of breath.
So as they arrive to this city of what is it called? Shining Rock? No, Shining
Planet.
Whatever. They're arriving to this area.
Yeah.
And the city is empty. Normally there's people there. Mm-hmm. Turns out everybody is going crazy and going on a murderous rampage and beheading people and wearing their faces. Mm-hmm. And they don't know why. And the jail cell happens to be the safest place left. And they find Desolation Williams among other prisoners. And, I mean, really, they just decide to try and work together to survive. It becomes one of these, you know, I'm the cop, but you're the bad guy, but we have to work together. That's all it is. Yep. And then, I mean...
people start getting... They start shooting people.
Well, so yeah, there's this plan to get on the train and escape, but the train doesn't arrive in time, so Ice Cube comes up with this great plan to just start shooting. And there's literally, like, hundreds and hundreds of these crazy creatures trying to murder them. Crazy people, I guess. And there's, like, six of them. And somehow they survive.
Mm-hmm. They have guns.
Guns.
They're good tools.
They eventually end up getting on a train, and they use a small atomic bomb to blow up all of the bad guys, right? I mean, that's pretty much... This is sort of just an action movie, which is also the weird thing about it, is, like, Carpenter has done sci-fi, he's done comedy, he's done horror. I don't know if he's ever really tried, like, just a straight action movie like this. I mean, you could say...
Escape from New York is
you could say that, but I always think of that movie as a comedy. I can't
really?
Help. Yes, because it's so ridiculous and over the top. To me, that movie is... It's not Mission Impossible or... I don't know. I mean...
Yeah.
No, it's...
It's not action in the same way. To me, like, I guess action, I think of, like, Jason Bourne is, like, a great example of, like, an action movie where, like, the fight sequence...
You mean a thriller. You mean he hasn't done, like, an action thriller.
Yeah. I guess. To me, it's, like, about the fight sequences and how serious it is, whereas Escape from New York is, like, over-the-top ridiculous. So,
kind of. But it does take... It's dark, though, and it's moody as hell, and, you know, a lot of the implications aren't funny at all. You know, I watched that one recently, actually, and I still kind of feel that way. It's just the notion of New York is a prison now, and the president's trapped in the prison. You got to go get him, you know?
Right.
That's ridiculous, but...
But some of the comedy, though, comes from how seriously it's being taken. That's the other thing.
Sort of.
Like, yeah. I'm not even saying that you're having a laugh at the movie's expense, but it's like, because the movie is having so much fun and there's so much joy in it,
yeah,
like, you feel like so almost this freedom to laugh at it.
Depending on what it is, but that doesn't pervade the whole movie. That's kind of what Escape from LA feels like to me. We're just like, this is so fucking dumb and silly, but you have...
Yeah, but there's a difference, though, where, again, I haven't seen Escape from LA, but, like, that movie, as far as I can tell, has a lot of unintentional comedy.
Yeah.
But it feels like you're having a laugh at that movie's expense, and it's like John Carpenter, if given the option, would not give you permission to laugh at Escape from LA. But he may give you permission to laugh at Escape from New York, because you're laughing at the right parts and not the wrong parts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I just don't think there is as many parts as I think Nick is referring to.
There's a joy to it, right?
Yeah,
there's a joy to that first movie, and there's a cynicism.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a cynicism to laughing at something like Ghosts of Mars or Escape from LA.
Sure, yeah,
right,
exactly.
Yeah,
I'm talking about the tone, like the intention, I guess. The intended tone is more ridiculous, over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not laugh out loud funny, but certainly more humorous and joyful.
But again, this movie should have been that. This movie should have been an all-out just crazy alien movie. Sure. And it wasn't that. And I don't know if the guy's just not capable or what. I mean, because again, he hasn't really made a straight comedy. So I don't know if he had made something in the vein of, say, Starship Troopers, it would have worked out.
Yeah.
That's more Paul Verhoeven's lane. Carpenter's not really in the Paul Verhoeven lane.
A lot of ways I could see Paul Verhoeven taking on something like this, too.
Yeah.
It has that some of those sensibilities, and honestly, even some of those same aesthetic choices.
Right. No, if Paul Verhoeven makes this movie, it's a better movie. No question.
Yeah, I agree.
No doubt about it.
Paul Verhoeven's returning to Mars. Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it. Boy.
Yeah. So keep going.
No, I mean, that was the general plot.
Well, they killed the monsters, which, by the way, are terrible monsters. We should mention that. Just poorly designed.
It's just a red mist, right? That takes over people's brains.
That's like the real monster. The thing is, the monsters themselves is like, the makeup should, it's fine. It's just not like lit properly. It's Greg Nicotero doing the...
Oh, is it really?
The makeup, yeah. Like all those guys who worked on Evil Dead and or Evil Dead 2 and then
The lighting is awful.
Yeah.
Like I think the lighting makes it way less believable.
This entire movie is just defined by being cheap, in my opinion. Every conceivable thing about it just feels cheap and uninspired.
Yeah. You know, if I was to think of like, if John Carpenter made this movie like 30 years before he did, or 20 years before he did, right? I feel like he would have spent a lot more time focusing on that red mist and a lot less time focusing on the people decapitating people.
Well, that's certainly true about the fog.
Right.
So there you go.
Okay. And that's like entirely the same thing, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're sitting here and there's this red mist that sometimes we get shots of the red mist and it's floating through, you know, he's holding the camera and it's floating through looking at the people and it makes a decision whose body to take over. Mm. And honestly, those clips are kind of cool.
Well, that's the scariest part of this story. And I think that you're 100% right. He's missing it. The scariness is not the like weird vampire creatures that may cut your head off. The scariness is when those creatures die and you don't know who's going to be next.
Yes.
But right.
He totally misses the boat on that.
In my mind, they shouldn't even be as threatening. They shouldn't even be armed. They should just be lunatics who try to claw at you. And they're easily taken care of, but when you take care of them, there's a consequence.
I mean, that's what makes zombies creepy. It's not that zombies can kill you. It's that zombies can turn you into a zombie.
Right.
That's what's scary about them. It's like that idea about Halloween. Trying to figure out who the next person is that's going to be killed is scarier than the actual kill.
Yes. Right?
It's that Alfred Hitchcock line where it's like... the difference between suspense and horror, right? Or horror is a bomb going off. Suspense is when you put that bomb underneath the desk, right? And you wait for it to go off. I'm totally flubbing that quote, but he totally misses the difference there. I'm going to look up that quote because I totally got it wrong.
There's also one great shot where they're having a conversation and all of a sudden the camera sort of pans to the door.
Yeah.
And the doorknob turns slowly while they're talking and they don't realize it. Like that's a great John Carpenter moment right there.
I agree. And I thought about that too when it happens. Like, oh, there he is. There he is. That's nice. And it happens. There's like, man, there's only like a handful of moments that I could probably point to where that happens. But the fact that I can only point to that small handful is just, you know, it's really upsetting.
And also, just on another note, our main character being this badass female was actually kind of cool. And I wish there was more of that. In a way, his other main characters that are like badasses, like this, like Snake Plissken or, you know, they are sort of larger than life face odds that defy everything, and she almost gets overshadowed by Jason Statham and Ice Cube in this movie. And if there was more focus on her being like this crazy badass that could face these insurmountable odds by herself, like that would have felt more John Carpenter.
Yep.
There's a distinct difference between suspense and surprise. This is Hitchcock who said this. And yet many pictures continually confuse the two. I'll explain what I mean. We're having a very innocent chat. Let's suppose that there is a bomb underneath this table between us. Nothing happens. Then all of a sudden, boom, there's an explosion. The public is surprised. But prior to the surprise, it has seen it seemed like an absolutely normal scene of no special consequence. But let us take a suspense situation. The bomb is underneath the table and the public knows it, probably because they have seen the anarchists place it there. The public is aware the bomb is going to explode at 1 o'clock and there's a clock in the decor. The public can see that it is 12:45. In these conditions, the same innocuous conversation becomes fascinating because the public is participating in the scene. The audience is longing to warn the characters. You shouldn't be talking about such trivial matters. There's a bomb beneath you and it's about to explode. So when you put the bomb under the table and the audience knows it, you have suspense. Before that, you don't really have anything. And this movie doesn't understand the rules of suspense in many ways. It's like there should be a lot of time devoted to just like watching the mist float around. And there should be a lot of guessing who is the character taken over by this mist. And there's none of that. It's just a silly action movie.
Yep. I would have loved it in scenes where they establish that quite well, that the mist is kind of jumping from person to person in a much more suspenseful way. And then at a certain mm-hmm. point after they kill someone, they don't cut back to the mist and it's just silent and they just wait to see who's going to end up yes. being taken
oh,
over.
Oh, see, that would have been...
That would have been wonderful.
Yeah, it's like The Thing. It's that yeah. same... Yeah. yeah.
Oh my God.
The guessing game of The Thing.
The blood scene in The Thing. Like, that is just like the best scene John Carpenter has ever created in his entire life.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, I don't think he ever got better than that. Nick, watch The Thing.
It was only 20 years later he did this one. It was only 20 years.
Nick, well, and you know what else is different in this is he gives a lot of backstory.
Mm-hmm.
He gives a lot of explanation as to what was happening here.
And very quickly.
Yeah, and we get introduced to a character who turns out she was the one who accidentally unleashed these ghosts from their crypt or whatever.
Didn't see that one coming.
And, right, I mean, it's better left unsaid is what we've kind of always said here.
I know,
yep.
You know, especially with horror and suspense. And so it sounds like he was trying to make a movie that he shouldn't have been trying to make.
Sure.
Maybe
it's just wrong for him. Like everything you're saying though, like what you just said, like what one of the things Carpenter is so good at is like leaving like the ambiguity of the horror kind of open-ended. And you sort of hinted to that as well. Just the minimalist stuff implying a lot of things. But here he's doing literally the opposite. It just feels like the antithesis of John Carpenter. Yep.
But it still distinctly feels like his movie at moments. There's enough moments that make you realize, yeah, this is a Carpenter film.
Yeah.
Just really bad Carpenter.
It's just really bad.
It's just really bad Carpenter.
I have to cite one thing. I was laughing so hard when I saw it because they said when this explosion was going to go off, it was only going to be 2 miles wide, which yeah, it's a big explosion.
That's a huge explosion.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty big.
2 miles is massive.
When they cut to the shot view from space of the explosion, that fucking thing is like the size of the Gulf of Mexico. The scale of the explosion is so wrong. Mm-hmm. And I was just rolling. It was just, oh my God.
Right. You cut to the entire planet yeah. and you see like Greenland explode. Yeah.
The entire planet just blows up. Yeah. Oh, that's a little wrong.
Yep. They just cut to the shot from Star Wars when they blew up Alderaan.
Exactly.
They don't even. It's like what that planet's not even red. What's happening?
Another Death Star?
Oh boy! Let there be light.
Yeah. Let there be light, indeed. Courtney Love was supposed to play the lead in this movie initially.
What the hell?
So, Hershey's pretty good with a shotgun, so that might have worked.
Oh boy!
Well, wow!
Whoa!
Hey now!
Okay.
All right, getting frisky at the hour mark of this pod. Okay. Yeah.
Whoa! Boy, Nicholas over there,
soaked in bleach, Nick.
Nick Evangelista.
Nick soaked in bleach, Evangelista. Okay. Yeah, that's all I got. The ending sucks at this point, oh my too, by the way. How bad's the fucking ending?
Well, there's not really an ending.
There's no ending.
It's such a bad ending.
Ice Cube, he handcuffs her to the train. He says, I'm getting off early so you don't turn me in when we get back to safety kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's
And then cool. She gets back and she tells her story, which is what happens at the beginning of the movie. So, you know, she tells her story and then she wakes up to Ice Cube handing her a gun and basically saying like, I'm assuming the ghosts of Mars have reached them now, right?
Yeah.
And he's saying, we gotta get out, or we gotta fight and get out of here. And so they just go off and fight together. Yes. The end. Ha ha.
It's like instead of Sam Neill going to a movie theater and grabbing some popcorn, he just goes and grabs a gun and starts shooting all the people possessed by Sutter Kane. That's what
In a weird way, I could totally imagine, though, somebody who knows what they're doing making a sequel to this movie that is good. Maybe it takes place on Earth and somebody came back from Mars and...
This idea of ghosts like turning people, like the whole yeah. Exorcist logic is always going to work as a horror device. But mm-hmm. like, yeah, I
I just don't think the tone was right here. I just don't think the entire approach was right.
I guess I'm just trying to say, like, everything's not lost. I mean, it could still be not salvaged, I guess, because the movie's done and it's bad, but, you know.
I don't think anyone's dying to green light a reboot.
That's true, too.
I think everyone wants this movie to be good.
Yeah.
Everyone's a Carpenter fan and they wanted to look at this one and say, yeah, we wanted another like great thriller horror movie by him. And it's just so not that. And it's so depressing to kind of realize that.
Why did the guy cut his hand off with a machete? Do you want to talk about that?
Because he was high.
He was high?
He was high and he did it on accident.
What a stupid scene. They're trying to eat, which I don't even know why that scene was in there in the first place. So they're all like trying to eat or whatever. I mean, whatever, it's there. This woman's trying to bust open a can, and a guy goes, I got it, don't worry, and he takes it, and he holds the can, and he grabs his machete, and his thumb is clearly over, like, the end of the can, and then he just comes down, holds up the can for her, and his thumb is off, and blood's spurting out, but the can's open. Ha ha ha.
He's a badass.
That's right.
And then he passes out, and then the movie just continues, and he just has no thumb now. Great.
I'm kind of into that scene.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so out of place.
Kind of into it. Not going to lie.
Oh, it's super dumb, but like it gave me a slight chuckle to see that guy with a little bit of blood squirt out of it.
But if the whole movie was like that, sure. But it's just this one scene that, again, is out of place from what the rest of the movie is.
But that almost feels like what the movie was shooting for the whole time.
Right.
Like, that's okay. The tone that the movie needed. But it, like, you're right, it is out of place. But at the same time, it does kind of feel like, oh, that's what Carpenter was intending all along.
Well, so if that scene wasn't there, this movie would have just been, like, bland and empty, right? If the whole movie was that scene, it would have been something really wild and funny. But I'm not sure it would have been good, but it would have been sillier. Maybe we would have recognized it was a parody or I don't know.
It's a bunch of nothing, guys. It sucks. That's okay to admit.
I don't like hair metal rock, so.
No, me neither. Nobody does.
I'm sorry, John Carpenter.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I have faith that one day you'll come back stronger than ever.
Yes. We love you still.
We love you.
You've made some awesome movies. Nick, you still need to watch The Thing and Halloween and, I don't know, watch Starman. Starman will make you feel much better about this one.
Well, I can check that out. Okay. What are we doing next month? Oh. I was not expecting that.
There are a few jokes I like more than when someone is just abruptly cut off to something loud and obnoxious.
We should just get an air horn in the studio.
All right, let's do it. John Carpenter. John fucking Carpenter.
We've done John Carpenter.
We've not.
Mm-hmm.
We did?
Yeah.
When?
Of course we did. We did at the beginning of the month.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, we did.
We did not at all.
I'm almost positive we did.
We didn't because we saved it because we said we're doing June Carpenter. We're going to save it to the end.
I thought we did almost positive.
We did Kurt Russell, didn't we?
No, I don't think so.
Nick, what did we do? I have the worst memory.
I don't remember.
I thought we were saving John Carpenter.
Okay, I think I have a good memory of how much he's worth.
Okay, let's
So depending on how close I am.
Well, fuck it. We'll just do Ice Cube then. Fine.
I'm almost positive we did John Carpenter.
I thought we were saving it to the end of the month.
Hmm.
We were building to it.
No, I think we did.
I thought we did Kurt because we wouldn't have done Kurt during another podcast.
Hmm.
We'll do Ice Cube. It's fine. Ice Cube. That's probably a more interesting number anyway.
Okay.
Ice Cube.
We didn't do him in Anaconda, did we? We've done way too many of these.
Fucking hell.
Did we do John Voight?
I think we did Voight.
I thought we did Voight too because, yeah, you know what? We totally did because we were like, okay, we're not going to have another chance to do John Voight.
Okay.
I'm confident with that one.
Ice Cube. Net worth of Drew Carey, $190 million. Give me that. The net worth of Ice Cube in increments of Drew
Carey. I'll go first. I'll say it's about 4 Ice Cubes.
To get to a Drew?
Ooh. Yeah, we'll go high.
Okay.
About, what is that, about 45 roughly?
Yeah, something like that.
A little more than 45.
I'm being quite generous with this guy. I'm saying 1.9 ice cubes to get to Drew Carey. So he's $100 million.
Okay, I'm going to say it's 1-1.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's 1-1.
Yeah. Oh, I thought I was going high.
Yeah. No.
Wow.
No, I think Ice Cube has done very well for himself.
Oh, yeah.
Personally.
Me too. Me too.
I mean, I think, he's probably a pretty smart businessman. I'm sure he secures pretty high pay for his roles.
Probably. He's also, one of the...
And he's not just an actor, yeah.
One of the most important, rap artists that's ever lived.
Yeah. Created gangster rap, essentially.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going with 45 million, 100 million, mm-hmm. 190 million.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The actual net worth of Ice Cube, of NWA fame.
And Anaconda.
And are we there yet? 100. And $60 million. That means I just won this week's edition.
That's close.
How many Drew Careys? There we go. Yeah, that's a better number anyway. For anyone that's curious.
I thought Carpenter was worth 25 to 30 million.
40.
Okay.
Maybe we did do it already. I don't remember, though. $40 million.
I feel like we did.
Okay.
I don't know. We gotta look back.
It was only a month ago.
Yeah.
I have the worst memory when it comes to this.
It's been a long month.
It certainly has. Ain't that the truth?
What are we doing in July? What do you want to do?
Well, we can talk off air, but there's a new Neil Breen movie.
Yes.
That we should maybe cover at some point. Mm-hmm. Joel Schumacher died.
Mm-hmm. So we got to do Batman and Robin. Do we have to do Batman and Robin?
No, we don't.
Okay.
I'll tell you what else, just throwing this out here. I mean,
go ahead.
We could do some Wet Hot American Summer, and we can not just do the one movie. We can do multiple.
It is indeed a wet and hot American summer right now.
I love
it. We just had the summer solstice, and that's been a long requested, long time coming.
Yeah.
So I think we can do all those next month.
Yeah,
I fucking love that movie.
Yeah, let's call it a grab bag.
So let's do Joel Schumacher first.
Uh huh.
Let's do some Neil Breen, and then let's dip into Wet Hot American Summer. Huh?
Okay. Yeah.
And I've gotten some feedback. People are liking when we tell them what we're watching, so they can watch it ahead of time. So
good.
I'm trying to give people some heads up.
Okay, I have an idea because we love getting Nick Cage in there as much as we can.
Ooh, I'm
Maybe
in.
We do Joel Schumacher's 8mm.
I'm in.
I haven't seen 8mm.
Whatever you say. I'm
stars
in.
Nick Cage, directed by Joel Schumacher. Not a particularly good movie, but apparently a particularly fun movie. So,
all right.
Okay. 8mm next week on the podcast.
Okay.
Sound good?
Yes.
Great. All right. Love it.
Check out the website, tmt.media, toomanythoughtsmedia.com. Nick, anything?
No, I've been away, so I'm trying to get back in.
Great. Fun stuff coming this month.
Yep,
hopefully
yep.
on the website. Some fun stuff in person.
Yes.
In person.
Very excited.
Yeah. We have to talk about that. All right. Love you. Until next time. You've been so naughty.
Naughty.